Welcome to the Board Game Barbecue, possibly the fastest growing board game community in the world. We are more than just a podcast. Join us on Discord to play games all the time with people from all over the world on platforms like Tabletop Simulator, Tabletopia, Board Game Arena, and any others. Join us in our Facebook community to discuss not only the topics of the week that come up in our podcast, but also the board game bracket and anything board games. But we still are a podcast. Thank you for tuning in and enjoy the show. The Board Game Barbecue, brought to you by Addicts, Not Experts. Hello and welcome to the Board Game Barbecue podcast. I'm your host, Steve, and Happy New Year. It's my first podcast since 2021 clicked over. I missed an episode last episode because I was too busy playing board games, so that's as good an excuse as any. Joining me tonight are two wonderful gentlemen from down south. Firstly, our first stop will be in Canberra to say good day to Jules. How are you going?
Hey, how you doing?
Very well, thank you. How was your New Year's?
It was really good. I was one of the lucky few that actually got to spend sort of Christmas, New Year period with their family. So I was very grateful for that. I brought in the New Year by playing Black Rose Wars. We started at like, I think it was like 10 o'clock and finished at 2 in the morning. So nice. Good, solid game.
Good work.
Excellent. And then that other voice you can hear is a little bit further south. It's Mike down in Melbourne. How are you doing?
I'm very well. Thank you, Steve. How are you doing, mate?
Very good. Very good. How about yourself? Plenty of games over the last week or so?
Yeah, man. I've been actually clicking some things into my BGG account. I've been wrapped. I've been playing a bunch of new games. My housemate's been getting a bunch of new games. I've been just trying to get them in whenever I can. But yeah, loving it, mate. It's been great.
Yeah, it's really been this has been the hardest week to pick a sizzle because I've just played so many games. And it's actually been a while since we've been on because
it's been a
while.
We
pre-recorded the 27th episode, so it's been – and then that one was all in before that. So, yeah, it's there's been plenty of games played. No excuses for oaths tonight.
Done.
All right, but we'll kick it off. So tonight we're going to follow in the footsteps of Mitch, Adrian, and Def, and we're going to do for our topic our year in review for 2020. But before that, we're going to do our sizzling games. So we'll get straight into that. Jules, let's hear your sizzling game.
Okay. So it's one. There's a bit of a story to this one, but my sizzling game is going to be Castell.
Ah, nice.
So I saw this copy, I saw the game, I should say, at one of our community members' places. It's Draven, who's here in Canberra. And he just showed it to me, said, I've been eyeing this game for ages. And he just showed me the box quickly as I was leaving his place from playing some games. And the theme and the artwork just captivated me straight away. So I went home. The next day, I watched some videos and bought it straight away. And I sent the package to Melbourne so I'd be able to play with my family. It arrived and then it was missing bits.
Oh, no.
And I was gutted. I've contacted the publisher. They said, yep, in the next week or so, we're going to send out your missing bits. So anyway, I still got to play it.
Good.
But just over for TTS, and it is an amazing game. So for those who don't know what Castell is, I feel like this is one that's really flown under the radar, basically. It's a game set in Catalonia where you are, I guess, I don't know who you're really playing as. But I guess you're the trainer or the leader of a team of people in building human towers, competitions for building human towers. So this is something that actually happens in that part of Spain. Mm-hmm. And basically, you go around competing in festivals that happen at certain points in the timeline of the game, and you can do local performances in certain regions if you happen to be there and have the ability to make those towers. And it's such a crunchy, clever game. I just am completely blown away with this game. So basically, on your turn, I guess I should step back and say there's a few core rules on how you can build your human tower, and you can train in different skills to break those rules and make better and bigger towers and taller towers. And there's a little wheel, which is sort of the crux of the game, that rotates, and it has the different skills you can train in, and the region in which you're allowed to train in, because you actually have the locations on the board where you get to move around and perform in, like I said, those festivals or do local performances. So it's a clever puzzle. There's lots of things to consider, whether or not to go and compete, because the more people competing in a festival, the larger the prize is. It's probably difficult to teach without having a look at this board, but Steve, you've also played it. But it's so clever. It's really well done. I think the artwork is beautiful. Some people say, but I think it's really well done. And I have to say, having the box as well, it's extremely well made. The component quality is fantastic. Nice thick cardboard bits. It has a tray for all the bits to slot into. And you have the most enormous bag you'll ever see in a board game. It's completely ridiculously oversized. It must be larger than an A4 sheet in size when it's laid out flat. And just all 100 and something tokens go in there, because you draw out some random, you can recruit more of the people to build your towers as you're moving from region to region. But man, I was blown away with this. I highly encourage people to check this out. It came out in 2018. It was published by Renegade Games, I can't remember the designer's name, but it's the only game he's published, and it is a cracker. I think he's done a phenomenal job. So, yeah, that's Castell. I haven't really explained how to play, but man, it's crunchy. It's so good.
It's such an original theme.
It is so original. Yeah.
Yeah, I really enjoyed my play with you, Jules. What I thought was interesting was that the idea of the game, the building of the people, that's one part of it. But the real crux of the game for me lied in almost like an area control game.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where you need to make sure that you're close enough to the next city that's having a performance so you don't miss out on that. But then the next one might be on the other side of the board. So sometimes you've got to kind of hedge your bets and go, well, people are going to go to that performance and then they're not going to be able to go to this one, so I'll head over this way kind of thing.
Yeah, and I guess one of those control elements that you – I haven't really mentioned, but when you can recruit people from the different regions, you know, each of the festivals have a requirement for you to even enter. So there's little number tokens which correlate with the different numbers sized of the different sizes of the people you use to build your pyramid. And you have to have those people in your pyramid to even be allowed to enter the festival. And so there's this real push and pull of like, I really want to get those, but I need to grab that number to even qualify to get into this festival and this one later in the game. There's so many different elements combining together that you've really got to churn through your brain and squeeze out the other side to hopefully get enough points to win.
Sounds interesting.
I think you'd like it, Mike. I feel like this is a game that you'd love. It's got that little bit of randomness about it, but yes. It's you do feel super smart. When you pull something off, you're like,
yeah.
Well, that is Castell. I might send it further down and speak to Mike and see what your sizzling game was.
Now, how many sizzling games are we allowed to have again? just the one?
I just looked up at the clock and realized I probably didn't give Jules enough time to talk about Castell. I thought we were running a bit early, a bit long, but no.
So we can throw in another couple.
We can go around. Like, we can go round two.
We've got honorable mentions. We've got a few. I flip-flopped a lot today with which one to sort of choose. And I literally just changed my decision because I think the reason this game for me is sizzling is, number one, I've played it a bunch of times. It's a game that my partner, who isn't a big gamer, asked me for. She said, I really want this game, so I bought it for her for Christmas. It's cheap. It's inexpensive. It's Cat Lady. It's a really quick little cute game, but it plays in under 15 minutes, and it sort of scratches the itch for me, like Point Salad or something like that, like a bit of set collection. And it's a game where it's really simple. I taught it to I went for dinner to my auntie's house, and she's only ever played like Rummy Cub and Skippo. And it took her a minute, but she got it, and she loved it, absolutely loved it. So the idea of this game, you're a crazy cat lady, and you're collecting cats. Surprise, surprise.
I'm already.
And funnily enough, all the cats that you rescue, you also have to feed, because cats that don't get fed don't last very long. So it's a game where there's a 9x9 grid of cards, and these cards consist of cats On the cats, they have the requirements to eat. Do they require two milks or a tuna and a milk or two chicken? There's a mix. Obviously, the more points the cat's worth at the end of the game, the more amount of food it probably needs. It then has things like catnip. Now, with catnip, if you own one catnip, if you collect one catnip, you lose 2 points or 6 points. But if you have 2 to 3 catnips, you earn 1 extra victory point per cat that you have fed at the end of the game. If you have 4+, you earn 2 points for every cat. So it becomes this really big multiplier. You can collect cat toys. So there's 5 different sets of cat toys. And if you collect the whole set, they go up in numbers from 1 point to 12 points if you have all 5, and you can collect multiple sets. There's cat costumes. If you have the most cat costumes, so sort of like Sushi Go and the puddings. If you have the most cat costumes at the end of the game, you earn an extra 6 points. If you don't have any, you earn -6 points, I believe. And the way you collect the cards on your turn, there's a little cat meeple. And you sit the cat meeple looking at a row or a column. And when you look at that row or column, you take all those cards, so 3 of them, and then you replace them. But when the next person's turn, the cat's looking. You can't take what the cat's looking at. So you have to take another row or column, unless you have a spray bottle. And you can spray the cat away, move it to a different section, and then take those cards. And it's fantastic. Like, you're just taking 3 cards at a time. But once you've played the game 1 round, it just really, really moves, and you snap through it real quick. And it's just fun because they have an idea what you've taken. Okay, you're going for toys. I'm going to get this. There's a bunch of hate drafting, and the best thing of it, you can take 3 at once if there's a good roll of it, you know? But then you have your stray cats. So stray cats, you have to collect things to discard to take them. But the stray cats have special abilities. So this stray cat will earn you an extra point for every white cat that you have fed at the end of the game. Or cat will, I'm just trying to think now. This cat is multicolored. It counts for 1 of every cat. Or this cat will be 2 points for every food you put on this cat. So do you have to decide, do I want to take that cat and then just put all my food on this one cat? Or do I want to collect multiple cats and try to feed them? At the end of the game, for any cats that aren't fully fed, are -2 points each. And the game ends pretty abruptly. And if you have food left over, that's also -points. And it's just so snappy, so quick. We went glamping, not camping. We're fancy people here. We went glamping for a couple nights. And we just sat out at the sunset and played on the table, just nice and easy. And it was perfect. It's quick. You're not sitting there for hours. It's got enough meatiness to it for a quick little game that I find really fun. And it's just special to me at the moment because it's a game that my partner asked me to play and that I've been able to teach a bunch of people in a short amount of time. So I've got, like, on my BGG app, I've got like days where there's 3 plays each of this game, and it's not often I play a game 2 or 3 times close together. So my sizzling game is Cat Lady.
That's
you mentioned it finishes abruptly, Mike. Is it something where someone triggers the game end and that's it? Or is there another round?
Well, because 3 cards come out every time, 1 round is, you know, if there's 4 people playing, that's 12 cards. And it's once the deck runs out. So you're kind of like, okay, I need to get, you know, 2 milks and I need one of these. And, oh, wait a sec, there's no cards left. Done.
Yeah, right.
And there's never a game that I've played that you're not like, oh, my God, I just needed this or I needed this at the end. Yeah, so it doesn't end all of a sudden without you really seeing it, but because it's 3 cards at a time, it just sort of shows up without you expecting it. But I reckon, I know that you like Point Salad, Steve, don't you? Yeah.
I really
reckon you'd like it, and I reckon it's a short, quick game enough that Jules would like as well. I think anyone could like Cat Lady, and there is an expansion that I want to get that just adds a bunch of new mechanics to it, a bunch of new things you can do. I haven't looked into it too deeply, but it adds a 5th, maybe a 6th player.
Okay.
But Cat Lady, I think it's fantastic. Give it a go.
There you go. Well, it's funny you mentioned Point Salad because you mentioned it at the start, so I was thinking of how the similarities line up with what you were saying. And the base similarities are the same. It's a quick game.
Yeah.
Easy set collection, easy to teach.
Mm-hmm.
Knock it out, play it again.
Yeah.
Just keep rolling over. So.
Just smash it out. You know, and by bringing out different stray cats, because you bring out 3 stray cats at a time, there's a little deck of stray cats so you can keep moving them around. But what I found is because I was playing a 2-player the whole time, you take out a bunch of cards. But when you play it at 4-player, there's a bunch of cats in the normal deck that are similar to stray cats with special abilities, which I thought was interesting. So it really boosts points if you get the right cat. So no, it's a great little game, and I've been really enjoying it lately.
Fair enough. Cat Lady, I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah.
I'm going to preface my sizzling game by saying the last episode I was on was Sarah and I talking about our top 10 games of 2020, and I have made myself a liar.
Uh-oh.
Because my sizzling game I mentioned on that podcast, but not necessarily, not in a negative light, but not in a positive light. We talked about games like Coattle and Trek in the World being Ticket to Ride killers.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my sizzling game is Ticket to Ride.
Oh.
So I know it's a bit random.
Okay.
Ticket to Ride is the game that got me into the hobby many moons ago. And I haven't, it's just sat on my shelf for a long time. I haven't really gone playing it. Every Christmas we pull out the Ticket to Ride Nordic countries and play that.
Mm-hmm.
So we did that again on Christmas Eve. And I just went, oh, gosh, I've missed this game. I do really enjoy this game. And then so we pulled out the base box and we just played normal Ticket to Ride a couple of times. And it's one of those games where everyone in my family knows how to play it. It's almost like comfort food, you know?
It just
works really well. But then it just started this Ticket to Ride, like we call it the renaissance of board games, because we must have played Ticket to Ride, I reckon, 15 times in the last week.
Wow.
It's just because it's the game for me. I mean, I like to play loads of different games, but for my wife and for my kids, they're just like, well, why don't we just pull up Ticket to Ride again and have another go at that? I'm like, well, all right then.
Yeah.
Won't say but no.
Yeah, that's it. And what's interesting, though, is that because I haven't played it in so long and I have played so many other games that have, you know, these difficult thinking mechanics, I played that game so different to how I used to play it.
Mm. Okay.
So for those gamers out there who might be like, oh, no, Ticket to Ride, go back and just see how much more you can think out your turns and map out your map, I guess. But there are certain places on the board where I will just go and immediately buy or immediately put trains down so that no one else can have them. I don't even care if they're on my tickets. Mm-hmm. I just want to make sure that that stops everybody else from getting that easy access to, you know, point A to point B or something. We just had a great time with it. The app helps because you can play it on your iPad or whatever else. And we actually drove down to my brother's house, which is about a 3-hour drive, and you know, the kids were playing it against each other in the back seat with a hotspot connection. Like, how good is this? So Ticket to Ride has been just an absolute family, like, crazy board game for the last week or so. And yeah, I think it deserves, obviously it doesn't need any pumping of its tires. It's gonna sell copies despite itself, but it's a great game. It's probably on your shelf. You probably haven't played it for a while. Pull it out and give it a crack because it is still an amazing game.
So my question for you, Steve, is then of the versions you do have, what's your favorite?
I really like the United Kingdom map. So not the London small version, but the United Kingdom map collection one. It's probably a bit more gamery, I guess, which is probably why where basically what you're doing is in order to go from England to Ireland, then you've got to be able to buy the technology to be able to run a barge across, so there's like you've got to buy steam engines, you've got to buy licenses to go between the countries, so you have access to these countries and things like that. So there's a bit more going on before you can just go and spread.
Yeah.
But it also, once you've spread, it's one of those maps where you can also just go and get tickets, and you might have already completed two or three of them when you pick them up. So you're just kind of just doubling up on yourself, and the scores ramp up. And that's probably my favorite. I haven't played the Japan one yet, but apparently that's really good.
Okay.
Out of the base boxes, probably my personal favorite is Ticket to Ride Europe, but my wife likes just standard America Ticket to Ride. So, but at the moment it's basically just been the USA one with the 1910 expansion, and we just can't get enough of it for some reason. We'll probably play again tonight after the podcast, to be fair.
I've got a question as well, Steve. You boast about, you know, you coming to it as a heavier gamer now and having to think your mind to it, and you played 15 times. What was your win streak like? Did Quack's history follow you, or did the thinkiness kick in?
No, look, I don't want to brag, but I did win most of those games.
Okay,
in fact,
okay.
There was one night where we played it seven times. And the reason we played it seven times was that my wife wanted to win.
Did she get it in the end?
She got it in the end. There you go. So I went to bed after that. But it was so funny because my daughter was there and she's like, Mum was like, "Ah, you've ruined me." And then we get to the end score and she loses. But before we got to that point, Heidi was like, "Oh, well, I guess we're playing again then."
Good work. That's great.
Nice. So yeah, a bit of a strange one, but Ticket to Ride, get it to the table again. You won't have a bad time, that's for sure.
Good call.
Nice.
Well, that's our sizzles. We've romped through that. Do we want to go around again and have a second crack?
Oh man, if we would, my next one's huge, so I don't know. I'll save it for another day.
All right. Fair enough. Well, it gives us more time to talk about a topic, which will be good. So we'll head straight there. We'll head to our topic of the week. So the topic for tonight is our retrospective on 2020, our year in review. And what we've done, actually, that's not true. We haven't done it. A member of our community did this on our Facebook page earlier in the week, and Mitch looked at it and went, "Righto, we'll steal that for our show." So that's exactly what we've done. Questions, he hasn't even bothered to give it his own flavor. He's just literally gone copy-paste.
Bloody Mitch. Done.
He's also done that with some other things. I won't bring it up.
Let's all play that. very good. So the questions, we'll go through them one at a time. So we'll just sort of share it around and everyone can say their little bit. But so the first one is not necessarily about 2020 itself. It's the best new game to you. So the first, it's a game that you played for the first time in 2020. It could even be Ticket to Ride. Probably not. But so I will go to Mike first. The best new game to you in 2020.
See, it's an easy one for me because nearly most of my gaming is in 2020.
true that.
It really kicked off once I joined this podcast. And the podcast is probably the reason for the one I picked for this one. And that's going to be Everdell. We've talked about it a million times, so I won't dive into it too deep. But ever since I heard, I think it was Def, I think it was the first person that mentioned it.
It was.
And ever since I heard him talk about how well it played, building the city, the artwork was amazing. I Googled some photos and that tree just pops out of that board. And I'm like, oh, I love me some bits. And then hear about the squishy berries and all those other things. And I'm like, all right, I need to try this game. I really, really need to try it. And back then, I don't think we're doing much TTS or anything back then. And I was out in the city having lunch with my partner one day and I saw it for sale not far away. I'm like, oh, I'm jumping on that now. Go. And I went and picked it up and straight away tried to learn. And man, I loved it. It was so great. And it resonates with me a bit more because my best friend came over the other day. And I've been slowly working him up, slowly working him up to heavier games. And he's a very, very smart guy. And I know he's going to be a big Eurogamer one day for sure. And he was saying, oh, I heard you talk about Everdell on your podcast and I want to play that one. And I was like, all right, it's his very first worker placement he's ever played, straight into Everdell. And I had to put the fool card on him. He had me worried. A new player, I would never play a full card on him, but he was smashing out the combos. And it reminds me that even though I'm a really crap player, the elegance in that game of getting that first engine started really well is a real art, choosing carefully what you're starting, when you're going to go into the next season. I think it's fantastic. And if I grow from that, they're amazing expansions. Like Spycrest, I thought was awesome. Love the bits again. And I love how it sort of tells a bit of a story. And I always say I love Spycrest because it, for me, makes the game harder and easier at the same time. You have these cards that make each season more difficult and it's really, really brutal. But then you collect these animals that you put little saddles on and ride on the backs of these animals and they give you special abilities that make the game easier. And I think it's a really cool balance. And Pearlbrook I thought was really interesting as well. Haven't tried Balfair yet. But for me, Everdell for sure. It's just amazing. Just won lots of points and I just want to keep playing it over and over again because the combinations and how thick that deck is just fantastic and I absolutely love it. It's great.
Very good. So my best new game to me was actually the first Oath game I did on the podcast. Episode one, my Oath game. Does anyone remember what that was?
No way. I can't remember.
I was going to say it's Teotihuacan, but it's not. It's not.
No.
No.
It absolutely is.
It is.
Yeah. Yeah. Teotihuacan was my swear and oath game on episode one of the podcast.
Oh, wow.
And I'd owned it. The reason I chose it is because it was almost the 1 year anniversary of owning it.
Okay.
On that day. It was like 2 days off it or something.
At the I'm most
like,
well, shame.
Yeah, pretty much. And I'd actually set it up 4 times beforehand and not played it because it is a daunting game. There's no question. Especially, you know, I've been in the hobby a few years, but again, like you, Mike, it's really ramped up since the podcast. So I feel like I've become a better gamer, I guess, since May. So it was just a bit daunting. And then I played it and I'm like, it's made me kind of fall in love with Daniel Toshini games because they all kind of have the same thing where once you understand what every place in the game does, it's a simple game. It's just a matter of working out a good strategy. And I played it a couple of times and I'm like, yeah, it was good. And I think I even said on the podcast, it was really good. I'd like to play it again sometime. Well, I played this game so many times this year and I absolutely love it. It's such a great game. I gave it my number 3 rating on my top 10 of all time. We did that a couple of weeks ago. If anything, it might even be knocking on the door of Terraforming Mars. It's so good. It just, and every time I play it, in fact, I played it over the Christmas break with my brother's family. And my brother actually was the only one who didn't really like it he didn't dislike it. He just didn't love it.
Okay.
And that's the first time I've ever played this with anyone and they haven't been keen to either play it again or just bought it. I played it with Adrian and MJ a couple of weeks ago and lo and behold, it turns up under Adrian's Christmas tree from Santa. it's so good. It just makes you, again, it's like I was saying before, Mike, about Castell, it makes you feel smart.
Mm.
When you do things in this game and you pull off these combinations and because you can really chain things along sometimes and I'll go here and that'll let me upgrade this dice, which means it'll ascend and I'll go here and then I'll move up this track twice and then I'll be able to get to this bonus. And, you know, all these things are happening and people are looking at the board just going, can we just go over all those moves again? Because I can't imagine you got that much done in that one turn. And it's so good. It's a beautiful game. And at first I probably didn't think that. I probably would have said it was a bit bland, but the beauty has grown on me with all of the tiles and the I've got the expansions as well. The expansions add some really good stuff, some variable playing powers, an extra place on the board. Ah, just amazing game. I would play this any minute of any day. It's definitely been the best game that I've played that's new to me this year. And that includes games like Gloomhaven. Was the first time I played that was this year.
Okay.
You know, the crew, space, there's been some crackers, but Teotihuacan is a standout for sure.
Do you think you're getting some beige fever, Steve?
Yeah, well, probably. I don't like to, I don't like to say things like that. And I deliberately, I had a dig at Eurogames on our latest Saturday silliness, knowing that it had upset a few people and, specifically Sarah. And she bit and she was like, I thought you were one of us. it's a great game. If you haven't played it yet, definitely check it out. It is not as daunting as it looks. And like I said, once you've figured out how the game flows and what the 8 positions do, it really is just about working out the best way to manufacture a victory. And there is no one clear path to victory by any stretch. In fact, elements of the game during the game can change that. If you've got a really heavy strategy on getting gold and doing decorations, but then when you go to the gold space, you have to pay a cacao for every worker that's already there, every different colored worker that's there. And it's really hard to get cacao. It's not an easy resource to get.
Mm-hmm.
So you might just look at your whole plan and go, you know what? It's just going to cost me too much money to go there. I'm just going to have to do something else now. So you've really got to think on the fly as well. So it just has everything. Great game.
Would you say it's a game you need to play more than once?
Yes.
You heard Adrian and Def, you know, he said it too. It's okay.
Okay.
I'm trying to be funny. You were saying how your brother didn't love it. I'm like, maybe he just needs to play it more than once.
Yes. Indeed. Yeah. It did. I think having someone teach you the game is a massive benefit.
Yeah.
Not that the rule book's bad. The rule book's great. It's just that there are so many moving parts that if you were to learn this out of the book, and that's what I did initially, I found it a bit hard. Yeah. But it's so easy to make people understand when you can show them things and show them icons and whatever else.
And stuff.
Yeah. I haven't had a failure really, except for my brother. But I reckon the problem with him is that he likes to teach himself out of rule books. So having me come in, and that was the first game we played where I taught him, that's a different scenario for him to learn games in.
Okay.
So I'd be interested to know what he thought after a couple of plays.
Okay, cool.
What about yourself, Jules? Your best new game to you?
Yeah. Look, I've acquired quite a few games this year, so mine won't be a huge surprise to people, but the best new game to me this year is Vindication.
Yeah,
so as I said a few weeks ago on our top 10, it's my number one, and I think it's got some serious staying power, not only because of the game in its current form, but the Kickstarter campaign that just finished with the new expansion content is going to drastically increase the replayability of the game, but also, to me, it's just going to add a whole new level, not in terms of its complexity, but it's going to add story. It's going to add actual story to the game. And that's what they envisioned Vindication to be from the start when the guys at Orange Nebula designed it. So I guess I'll talk just briefly about what that new expansion content is going to be. The main one they're adding is an expansion called Chronicles. And so basically, every time you get a card in the game, whether it's a new companion, a relic, a trait, or fighting a monster, you will also draw a Chronicles card. And that will give you a story about how you got there or, you know, something like that. And then you have an A-B choice about, you know, that event. That's cool. And that choice of event then influences some powers that you can get in the game. And so there's this... It's like they've added another layer to the game where you need to choose and craft this story and this journey as you're trying to just try and craft your engine to win the game itself, which I think is just going to be amazing, just totally amazing, and bring the game to the level that they really wanted it to be. But how I've played it so far with the content that's available, it was my number one. And it was almost my number two, but with this extra stuff coming, I think it's going to be really hard to knock off that top spot. The other little expansion that was a surprise that they added was called Villages and Hamlets. And that's going to basically add these little sideboards to the game where you visit one location and then there's a sideboard you look to, and it's actually that location is three new locations or even five new locations. So they've extended the range of things that you can do in the game by adding this little module that is, just going to expand that island. Just that, you know, in some cases it might add another 20%, to the size of the island. So, look, I haven't even explored everything there is in the base box, and I know there were a lot of people in our community that were saying, oh, it sounds really amazing, I don't know whether I should get it, and, you know, it's quite expensive, which it is if you're going all in. But I told people, look, if you're not sure if you're going to get it out that often and you know that you're really going to like the game, just get the base box. There's enough modules in there to keep you busy for a long time, and I think the game is great. If you could afford it and pay that little bit more, I said get the Chronicles expansion, the new one. The designers have said from Orange Nebula, they would never play the game without that expansion ever, because it just adds that story element, which they always intended it to have, and adds a really interesting layer to the game. So that's the new stuff. Why I love it? I think it's just a great puzzle. It's one of those games where you look at it, and you can see, okay, that's how I can get a point, and, oh, okay, that's how I can get another point. But there's no clear path to victory. You have to create your own and find the synergies in the cards and find the synergies in the locations to really get a victory point, you know, generator going by comboing those abilities of your companions and artifacts that you've been able to collect and so forth. I really like those games I've found this year that don't give you that clear path to victory. Yeah. You have to find it or you have to create it. And Vindication is this one where you have to create your path to victory. So, yeah, that's the best game to me for 2020. My number one, Vindication.
I got to actually sit down with Jules and play Vindication a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
And sitting across the table from him, I think I could actually hear the gears churning in his head when he played it. And you could just see the evil smirk rise in his face. He's like, oh, look what I can do. And I left there wondering if I'm going to back it or not either, because I was very interested in it and I was teeter-totting on whether I was going to get it or not. Because it isn't super cheap, like, but, you know, it seems like it's worth it. And then after we finished playing, like, my problem was I take a while and they're sort of very different games to absorb what I'm trying to do, why I'm trying to do it, and how to get there. And as we continued, it got better and better and better, to where I would have obviously made a bunch of different decisions. Mm-hmm. And then you started showing me what comes in the box, and there's this module that adds this and this module that adds this. I'm like, wow, there's so much replayability, and you've said it a million times, but you're never going to go through all the cards in a game. You go through such a small amount of them. The tiles where they come out are going to always be in a different place. And I did what you did when you said you kept thinking about it. And I'm like, oh, I'm really on the fence about this game. And I kept thinking about it. And on the 0 hour, I caved and I backed it with the expansion because it is a fantastic game. It was really, really good. And I can see that once I understand the game properly, what I'm trying to do, and get some people around me that understand it as well, I can see how much potential there is for a real battle and dominating different areas and trying to get there. And it was a lot of fun. And even we had too many players, so I teamed up with my partner and we're there whispering to each other and trying to figure out the next move on. It was fantastic. I really enjoyed it though. Great game.
Yeah, I always tell the story that I saw this game pop up in the board games marketplace, and it's like 3 minutes, and I just went, I went to say, I'll take it. And then some other bugger got in front of me, which was Jules Watson.
Yep.
So I haven't actually had a chance to play it, but I actually did just pick up a copy today.
Yeah,
so,
I saw that.
Pretty, because I was going to back the Kickstarter, but I've been so keen to play this game for a while. And Jules, you and I talked about it before. Mm-hmm. You got your copy. Just, it was one of my most anticipated games.
Yeah.
And I just don't want to wait another year. You know, I just want it. Yep. So I thought, you know, I'm not going to back it. I'm going to see if I can find one. And then nothing came up on the marketplace page for a while, but I was lucky enough to get one today. So pretty happy with that.
I think it's worth mentioning as well, the game pretty much sold me when the bag written on it says scumbag. It's a scumbag. Nice. Like, that's enough to sell the game, I reckon. Yeah. Like, that's fantastic. Who doesn't want a scumbag?
They're very clever. The crew at Orange Nebula have such a great sense of humor, and you can see that bleed into the game. I love it.
You start the game as a guilt-ridden
scumbag.
Scumbag. Ah, poetry. Yep.
And beautiful. Then you become a respectable human being.
Yeah, so good.
Very good. Well, we'll move straight on to biggest gaming regrets in 2020. I'll go first here. And I mean, the easy thing to say is that I wasn't 30 seconds quicker on that Vindication post. But I'll go with something else. My biggest gaming regret was not backing Hell the Last Saga. Oh,
okay.
I've thought about it a lot because
interesting.
I had it backed and then I pulled out. And then, Jules, you and I got a chance to play
with Sam Healy.
With Sam Healy in the virtual gaming con. And I got to admit, it didn't really make me want to go out and buy that game.
I thought you were turned off by it.
Yeah, we played for about 2 or 3 hours.
Yeah,
I think we only
had
4 rounds. Mm-hmm. And I thought, that's just not enough interaction. You know, there's not enough going on. There's too much time sitting and waiting. Mm. So at that point, I was like, yeah, no, it was right decision not to back it. But since then, I've watched a few videos of some more gameplay with people who are just on TTS, but people who are familiar with the mechanics in the game. And the amount of time that was wasted because we didn't know what we were doing and everything needed to be explained, that story just came out. It, where it was very disjointed for us, I felt like when it flows, the story does a really good job of ramping up, and it makes sense. To me, it was just like, okay, we've got to go from here to here and do this, and that's how we're going to get out of here.
Yeah.
Where when you see it as it's supposed to be played, it's very much you get it. You know, you get involved with your character's storyline, and I wish that I didn't cancel my pledge, and hopefully it'll come to retail. And
hang on, there's a few things we need to add to this story. One, it didn't help we played at a stupid o'clock in the morning.
True. That's very true.
But the good news is the pledge manager's still open.
Tell me that. Yeah.
Get out the pen.
And Def, when you listen to this, that message is for you too, buddy. But the pledge manager is open till like the end of this month or maybe even Feb, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, man.
Your biggest regret, Steve.
Yeah, well, I know what I'm doing after we get off the show. That's for sure. I'm going to go play Ticket to Ride, and then I'm going to back this.
I'm pretty sure. I want to go and check this now. The other thing I was going to mention was it's a Kickstarter exclusive. It won't go to retail. And they have explicitly said, we will not bring this game to retail because it's too expensive to produce in mass quantity for retail. So
Righto. You can stop now, Jules. It's fine.
And I need to check all this. I would actually feel really bad if they'd already closed it, but I'm 99% sure it's actually still open. Yeah. So, and I've just gone on the page. It says late pledge now. So the button's
okay.
There.
Okay. Well, I got to give Mythic Games credit because I also did the same thing with Super Fantasy Brawl, and and their late pledge came through. So I did get that in the end. So I might be on the Mythic Games bandwagon for a bit longer.
Yep.
What about yourself, Bike? What's your biggest regret of 2020?
I was really trying to think about it. And a game that I just backed a few games, and there was a game on Kickstarter when I first started figuring out that I really love polyamino style games. And I think it was called Project L. I was like, oh, shouldn't I just backed this and bought this, and I can't justify it. And since I've spoken to a couple people that actually have it from when it first came out, I believe, and they rave about how good it is, and I haven't had a chance to play it yet. But that's something for me, I think, I just love the way it looks. It looks like it's going to be a really, really fun game. And when I was thinking about my biggest regret, that was one that I sort of teetered on for a long time because I bought so much in such a short amount of time, I couldn't justify it. And I keep thinking, oh, I wish I took that one. If there was one other one, there was a online sale for a game that's sometimes hard to find and a really good price with expansions, and that was Dungeon Degenerates. It looks like a really interesting Gloomhaven-y type game with these bright, crazy neon colors and a bit of cheeky humor. That's another one that I've had my eye on for a long time. And that is really expensive to buy brand new. And you don't see it come out like secondhand often at all. And I should have jumped on it a lot quicker as well. So that was my second little regret, Dungeon Degenerates.
Jules.
So I thought about this all day, really, and I don't have a game that I regret not playing or getting. To this point, like, I feel like I've been quite lucky. I'm going through my save projects from Kickstarter, and I've been able to pick up these ones that I didn't back, like Pipeline. I've been able to get in the Hall of the Mountain King. I've been able to get after the fact. I've gotten Anachrony after the fact. What else have I done after the fact? There's
Can
been
you
a
stop
couple
that
of
banging,
other ones.
Please?
I guess it's not really a regret as such, but at the time that Hell of the Last Saga was running, there was also Ankh, Gods of Egypt, and Cloudspire. Those three combined were too much. So in the end, I had to go, okay, Ankh is going to have a ridiculous amount of Kickstarter exclusive content, which I would really like to get. And Hell of the Last Saga is a Kickstarter exclusive game. Cloudspire is not. And I'll always be able to pick that up from the publishers. So that one had to go. But I don't feel like that's a regret because it's kind of like I just don't have the money for that. But I would probably say my number one regret for this year, but technically it's kind of weird because I backed it in 2019, but it's not getting the extra mat or game board, the neoprene game board for Super Fantasy Brawl. Because I didn't do it just because I thought, I'm just going to get the base box as it is in the expansion, and if I love it, I'll pick it up later. And there has been so many times since I've gotten that game now where I'm like, I wish I had that second board. We could be doing two games at once right now.
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, man.
It's not even about the neoprene. It's just about the fact that you can play twice, two games at once.
Yeah, I couldn't care less if it was just another cardboard board. I just want a second surface to play two games at once. I know that the neoprene mats will come to retail eventually, but I regret not getting that. I wish I'd gotten the second one because there's not many moments where I just have one person over to play a game with me. It's always, two or three or four. And if you've got that many, you can run two games at once because that Kickstarter exclusive box came with enough components, the cards and all the tokens to run two games. You just needed a second board. So, yeah, that would be my regret.
All right. Well, let's move on to more fun, sprightly things then.
Yes.
And we'll move into 2020 now.
Mm.
And I'll go back to you, Jules, and I'll ask you what the best game released in 2020 was.
Perfect segue into It's Super Fantasy Brawl for me. Yeah. Fair enough. I think that's the best 2020 game I've played. I only got it a few months ago. It was a few months back now that the pledge arrived, and it almost caught up to my most played game of the but it surpassed a lot of other games very quickly, and I could just keep playing the game round after round after round, trying new champions. I still haven't gone through them all, and let alone the combinations of champions. But for those who have still not heard about Super Fantasy Brawl, it's an arena combat game. It's a one versus one. You can play it 2v2, which I've done once, and perhaps I could talk about that a little bit in a sec. But you have three champions. You're fighting off against each other. You're trying to knock each other out to get to first to five victory points. But there's also objectives at the same time. You're trying to control certain regions of the board or level up your champions. There's different ways in which you can score those points. And you're trying to do them both at the same time. And I always tell people when I teach this game, you can't just focus on fighting. You will not win the game, guaranteed.
Yeah, for sure.
You have to fight and position yourself to score objectives at the same time and use what you've got. It's a tight little game. You know, you've only got five cards and you've got the three cores, the yellow, the blue, and the red that you can use each turn, but you might not have cards of all three colors and you might not have the cards of the champions that you want to be activating. It's just such a clever game, such a simple system. And I'm very excited to see all the champions that Mythic Games bring out in future. It's just going to be an epic universe that they're going to have and some really exciting gameplay and tournament scenes in the future, which I'm excited about. And I'll just touch on that 2v2 player variant. I thought it was actually really good. You have two champions per player, so it's a 4v4 on the board kind of game, and it's first to 7 victory points. And you take alternating turns. And the other cool thing is the defense cards that you get, you can actually use them to save any of your champions or your allies.
Yeah, right.
So you've got this, you actually feel like you're working together. It's not two just disjointed teams working together.
Yep.
So, yeah, I thought it was really good. I think the game is at its absolute best 1v1, but I thought the 2v2 was very solid.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, Mike, best game released in 2020.
So I'm pretty sure it came out in 2020, and that was, for me, Isle of Cats. I thought it was fantastic. Once again, found my love for polyamino-style games.
Cat games. What's going on?
Yeah, Cat Lady.
Good point. Yeah, Cat Lady. Yeah. I need to get a game of the crazy Cat Lady of the island. I don't know, I messed that up. Crazy Island Cat Lady. I just thought it was fantastic. It looks gorgeous on the table. I really love how there's different modules of cards they can add that gives you different objectives. You really got to sort of work towards, saving cats and try to balancing up the game. And I've only played it once or maybe twice since, but I just sort of look through my list, go, all right, what games have I played and what games have sort of come out in 2020? And for me, it was that one. That one was a big standout because it really impressed me. I sort of heard about it a bunch of times and didn't pay much attention, but as soon as I opened up the box and saw that they had a special place for your cat to sit in the inside of the lid, I thought it was fantastic. My friends taught me, and I just fell in love with it. Once again, it just looks beautiful. It isn't super hard to understand. You have to make a lot of tough decisions in that game as to what sort of objectives you're going to take and how you're going to place your cats. Are they going to try to cover this bit or that bit? Or are you going to cover rats to not lose points? Or what are you going to kind of go for? So I thought Isle of Cats was fantastic. Definitely one I'm hanging to get to the table a bunch more because I have not played it enough. I've just been trying to, you know, get at least a play in most of my games, and we've all been buying games around here lately, so I've been playing a bunch of different games. But now that's one that definitely was a big standout for me for 2020, and I'm hanging to play a bunch more in 2021.
Nice one. So I'm going to make a liar of myself again here. Because in that same episode with Sarah, we did our top 10 games of 2020, and Takenu was my number one game of the year. And it has been surpassed by a game I hadn't even played when I did that list. I did mention it I thought I'd like this game, and I love this game. And I'm trying to like go, I don't want to do recency. Like I don't want to be just because it's fresh in my mind. Mm. But I can't fault it. And that's Dune Imperium.
Okay. Oh, that wasn't what I thought you were going to say.
Okay. Yeah, no. Well, there is another very, very big game as well that I really like. But that did make my list, that one. But Dune Imperium, the player interaction is what makes this game so good. I've played it with a few different groups of people, and every time there's stand-up moments, it's super close. The combat's great. And I love that you can... Like the card play in that is very Blood Rage-esque. Like you have your fight, and then you can manipulate it intrigue cards, and you can also just stay out of it if you want, and just go, you know what, you guys can fight for that. I'll just hang around and pick up the scraps next round. And but I've played that I don't know how many times, at least four or five in the last couple of weeks, and the worst score I've seen anyone get was 7. And you win the game when you get to 10.
Yeah.
So it's always been super tight. And even when that person got 7, it was actually the game either ends when someone gets a 10 or ends after 10 rounds. And it actually ended after 10 rounds. Oh. And at that very moment, the scores were 9, 8, 7. But the guy who was on 8 got 2 bonus points with an end game trigger card to take the lead to win in 10, 9, 7. So it was still super tight. But it's just... And that's every game so far. It's so, I don't want to say easy, but it is fairly easy to keep track with the leaderboard. And I've robbed out to a lead and then been overtaken. And I just think it's really cool. I love the fact that you got the factions, you work on getting alliances with factions. And if you do, that potentially makes some of your cards stronger in your deck.
Mm-hmm.
And even there's one space on the board that's quite valuable, but you need to have a level of influence with the Fremen in order to go there. So what's been interesting is my initiation into Dune was playing Dune Imperium. I've never read a book, never watched a TV series, never watched a movie. I know nothing of Dune. I didn't even play the PC game that apparently was amazing. I've heard it all since. People are like, have you done this? And they're like, no, nothing. Played the board game. But I've actually gone in reverse, and I've actually gone and started watching the trailers for the 1984 movie, which if you've got a few minutes to spare, I absolutely recommend. It's fantastic.
Okay.
But even better is the 2000 trailer for the TV series. That has worse special effects than like Paw Patrol. It won awards for cinematography in the year 2000. Like what were they smoking in 2000? And my wife said, but it's 20 years ago. Stuff's come a long way since then. I was like, I'm sorry, Indiana Jones, Star Wars?
Yeah.
But there's the 20 years prior to this. This is terrible. but just do it just so you can see, what's his name, Harkonnen float around. It's quite good. So it was funny, though, because we're watching the trailers and they're mentioning names and I'm going, oh, that's like the board game.
Yeah.
Where most people would be playing the board game going, oh, that's like the movie.
Yeah.
It's funny, Steve, because I have a similar journey to you. I've never read the books. I've never played the games, the video games. I've never seen the movies. And my first experience to the whole universe was Dune. Not Dune Imperium, just Dune. And, there's a lot to take in. It's a pretty epic, big game. But I think from everything I've heard you talk about Dune Imperium, I think Dune Imperium, you don't need to know the franchise to love the game.
Anything.
Yep.
Yeah.
Whereas Dune, the board game, you need to appreciate the franchise, I think. There's so many intricacies and the variable player powers that are straight from the lore in that universe that you just kind of don't really appreciate if you don't know it. It's just kind of a really strange war game that where you don't use about 90% of the board. It's just wacky, but yeah.
Yeah, I feel like, and I think I might have said that too, like if you're a Dune enthusiast, mm-hmm. this isn't the thematic immersive game that you, want. Dune would be that one for sure. But
absolutely.
That being said, I did play it with a Dune fanatic and it was really fun because he was adding flavor text to the game. So we do something like I played this card that was really negatively affected other people and the other guy got really upset and then he just jumps in and says, well, Dune is a harsh planet. Yeah, things do go wrong. It's just very cool. But yeah, no, that was such a great game. I just want to play. It belongs in my board game bag because it goes everywhere with me. I just want to pull it out and play a game.
There you go. All
right, that's everyone for best game. So let's go to biggest surprise. And I'll just keep talking for a little bit here because this game has already been spoken about. My biggest surprise was Super Fantasy Brawl. Yeah, as I just mentioned a bit earlier, I did back it, then I pulled out and I was sort of balked at the shipping price or whatever else. I got a chance to play it at Virtual Gaming Con and I went, wow, this is better than I expected. But then when I got the box and I played with the real things, I was just, we played
a whole nother level.
We played like four games and then we went, right, let's just start a tournament. So straight up into a tournament. It was so much fun. The guys that I played with, they both got a copy at Christmas. It's just turned into this huge thing. It's a fantastic game. So you said enough, Jules. I won't go on about it. But I was expecting to like it. I wasn't expecting to love it as much as I do. So.
Oh, that's awesome. It had a happy ending, that story. You were able to get the copy.
I was a bit like Hell the Last Saga, potentially. I might be able to get on a late pledge.
Yeah.
What about yourself, Mike? What's your biggest surprise of 2020?
I was thinking a bit about this one, and I think a bigger surprise for me was the game I didn't like the first time I played it, but actually ended up loving it when I played it with all you guys, and that's Cartographers.
Yeah.
When I played in real life, I just didn't care for it. And I don't know if it's because I had to draw, I just wasn't getting it, and I didn't do well. I don't know. Maybe just the interaction wasn't there. Well, I think once again, I think when I played it, I was still getting to know my gamer group as well. So there wasn't as much elbows in the sides and, giving each other a bit of a stir. But as soon as we played it all together on Tabletop Simulator, and we started messing with each other's boards and we started, the whole, even not playing the game was just fun. The sort of just mucking around with each other. But then, going and getting the little, what are they called? The pink things, the little monsters when you put
them on the ambush cards.
Ambush cards.
Yeah, yep.
Putting them on someone else's board and trying to see how bad you can mess them up. And once again, finding my love for Polyamino again,
just
it really amped it up for me. And this game that I thought I was not going to like at all, wouldn't want to copy, sitting on my shelf now, still in shrink, but it's one that I didn't think twice about until I played with you guys, and I had so much fun. I'm like, nah, I need this game now, and it really turned it around for me when I never thought it would. So Cartographers, I even backed the Kickstarter for the new ones as well. I just want to play more of it. I want to get into it, and I need to get some. I think I still don't want to draw little trees or anything, so I need to get a bunch of colored pencils if I want to play with the physical copy.
Yeah, definitely colored pencils is the way to go.
Definitely. So I'm going to look into that because that's a game, I think it'll be easy to teach people that haven't really played anything before, and I think it'll be fun in a big group of people. So, Cartographers is definitely my biggest surprise.
Yeah, that's been a hit with my in-laws this year because, we haven't been able to see each other in person. It's one of the games we've been actually able to play, via Zoom or whatever other video call software you use. And they said, when you come down to Melbourne, bring Cartographers. We want to play it in person. And that's what we did. And they just love it. It's so simple. And I think you're right, Mike. The game by itself, there's not a lot going on. And with a group that's not super into it, it could be very dry, sort of just like, oh, yeah, I'll put my shape here.
Yeah.
But when you get the group banter and you get the ambush cards come out. You're like, oh, you bugger. You put that there and I needed that. And it's good. And you just never know when those ambush cards are going to come out.
Exactly.
So, yeah. I think when I played with my my in-laws, the first two rounds, we didn't have any ambush come out. And the third round, all three of them came out. And they were just like, no.
Oh, that's great. That would have been so much fun.
Yeah, it was really good.
We actually just played this last week again when I was down at my brother's. And that was their first play of it. And we didn't get an ambush card until the fourth round.
Oh,
man.
And it was only like the third last card of the game.
Oh,
so
really?
There was hardly anywhere left.
You couldn't put it anywhere, yeah.
And I'm like, this isn't usually how it goes. We all have massive scores because there's no negatives on the board at all. It was just like we could have been hammered. And that was the only one we got. We got one ambush
out
of the potential, what's that, 4, 3, 2, 1. That's potentially 10 chances. Well, not really, 4 chances, but yeah. Yeah, it was very surprising. So I'm like, you need to play it again because this game can be harsh.
Oh, yeah. Very harsh.
This is not harsh right now.
Yeah, because on that third round when I was playing with my in-laws, we were getting like -8. Even one of them had like -15 by the end of the round. It was punishing because it depends how the scorecards come out, right? And one of them was you score 3 points for every complete diagonal touching the left side to the bottom. So we're all amassing our shapes in the bottom corner. And it left all this open space for when the ambush cards came out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was good times.
What about yourself, Jules? What's your biggest surprise?
My biggest surprise for this year, honestly, I wanted to say it was Brass, but I anticipated it to be good because it's ranked number 3 on BGG. The one that was the most surprising to me, I've already talked about, and that's Castell.
Mm.
Yeah,
this came out of nowhere. It was literally Draven just saying, hey, I've wanted this game for ages. It's really cool. And it just, I'd never heard of it. I'd never seen it in a board game shop before. I knew nothing about its existence. Looked it up, played it online 2 times, purchased it, and it has just captivated me. I love this game so much. And it's understandable why it's come out of left field. It's ranked number, 1,118 on BGG. It's way down the list. Mm. But I think this game is top 100 material.
Secret
gem. It is that good.
Well, like I said, I've only heard one other content creator talk about it, and that's the Brothers Murph. They rave about it.
And I can see why.
Yeah, yeah. But you just assume that when people are that in love of the game that it would a lot of people would be talking about it, but it's just not the case.
No, and I have no idea why. This is going to be the next barrage, okay? Like, we're going to get people to learn about this game.
Oh, I'm sorry. Dune Imperium's the next barrage.
Look, there's plenty of room for more board games on every shelf.
Well, you guys haven't played Cat Lady.
Have you seen behind me?
But honestly, it came out of absolute nowhere and blew me away. Like, no other game has. Like, I've anticipated games to be good, and so that's why, you know, I've gone and played it, and yeah, it's amazing. It's really good. But this totally left field, knocked my socks off. It's amazing.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this one's a bit of an easier one. This is less subjective, but most played game of 2020. So we can look at one of two ways here, or we can mention two games if you wish. You want to talk about the play counts or the hours played. So, Mike, I might throw to you first. What's your most played game of 2020?
Well, yeah, there were so many games that I've played like once here, maybe twice. So I think that means for me in the last couple of months, my most played game, I have to say, is Pandemic Legacy Season 1.
Mm.
You know, yeah, just a game we keep going back to, trying to get a weekly play. It doesn't always work. Some nights, you know, doing 2 rounds because we lost and we want to get it back. And, you know, when you have a 50-50 win-lose streak, you know, you play a few extra games of it.
That's true.
But, yeah, it's definitely taken up a lot of time for us, and I've enjoyed every minute of it. It's been the game that keeps us on the edge of my seat. I think we've got 2 months left. And we're really excited to see how it ends and how we do, because the game just gets harder and harder and harder, and we love it. It's great. And, you know, and once again, hard to talk too much about without spoilers. But nah, I really rate it. We're all talking about, you know, are we going to play season two next or just go straight to season zero, which we're probably going to get two to stretch it out a bit. But that's definitely been my most played game so far. Look, I wish I was logging games earlier. I've only started logging games properly in the last couple months, maybe. So I'm looking forward to the end of next year sort of seeing the actual most played hours, because that might be different, you know. It definitely might be different, but I'm pretty sure at the moment Pandemic Legacy Season 1 is probably the winner for me.
All right, what about yourself, Jules?
Yeah, so my most played game of 2020 was Quacks of Quedlinburg.
Oh.
In terms of number of plays, that is. Yeah, like for obvious reasons we've said ad nauseum, it's just a fantastic game, and I've taught it to lots of different people. That's probably why it's gotten so many plays, because it's easy to teach, it's not a long game, and it's good at all ages. So it's a no-brainer why it's got the most plays. So, but in terms of time, it would be Vindication.
Yeah, right.
So I've played it, I think it's 8 times, and I've only got it in the latter half of the year, and you know,
it goes for a while.
Yeah. So depending on the player count, but most of the games were around 2 and a bit hours. That is also because I'm constantly teaching people the game. But that's fine. It definitely gets quicker when everyone knows the game, but yeah, Quacks of Quedlinburg had the most number of players, but in terms of hours, Vindication.
Well, for me, my most played game is definitely not the most hours. So with 119 plays, The Crew is my most played game. No surprise there. But the most hours played with only 55 plays, 87 hours of Gloomhaven the most played game. Yeah. So I'd probably give the nod to Gloomhaven there.
Yeah definitely. Sure.
It's such a great experience. I wish I could play it for another 87 more hours. But my old gaming crew, shout out to Ness, Elliot, and Matt. They can finish the job for us.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of one of those things, like I've mentioned on the show before, that I gave them the box for them to finish the story. Yeah. And I'm like, I just forgot that I've still got Forgotten Circles on my shelf, and I've ordered there's this Envelope X character, which I won't say anything more about, but the components they've just released components for that character, and that's coming with Frosthaven. So I'm like, oh, I'm going to have that, but
no,
not
Gloomhaven.
The game to play with. So, but I'll find someone. There'll be another Gloomhaven crew.
Yeah,
and I can turn up with my Envelope X.
Have you heard any updates from the game? From them continuing the game?
Yeah, they did. They played there. I think they played their first. They only played once because it was Christmas. Mm. One of them's a teacher. Ness has just had a baby, so it wasn't the simplest thing to try to coordinate. But I'm pretty sure. I think they said they played one day. But they played must have played a few scenarios. So they're trying to get a replacement in, because I said just retire me and play on as 3-player.
Yeah.
But then they're trying to get a replacement so the character can carry on. I don't know which one I'd prefer. I don't know
whether
the legacy to continue or to end. You know, it's a tough one. But those two games I've played, and they're great games. They're both in my top 10 for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll move on to the last question of our review, which is actually about 2021. So this is a 2020 game. It says Kickstarter, but we can go with, you know, pre-orders or whatever else. Yep. 2020 game that you look forward to receiving the most in 2020. So 2020 or 21 game, obviously. Mm. Let's go with Jules first this time.
Oh, man, this question's so hard.
just pull out my list.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this 2020 has been an insane year for Kickstarters. There have been so many quality games. I can't. In all my years in the hobby, this past year has been the most punishing in terms of Kickstarter for me personally. I don't know about everyone else, but another Nemesis, another game from Chip Theory Games, Mythic have gone on a rampage. Simon, of course, is always releasing something big every year. It's just, it's been ridiculous. But anyway, I'm going to stick with what I've said before, because I'm pretty sure we've sort of touched on this question in a previous episode. And my most anticipated game for 2021 for me is Ankh, Gods of Egypt. That's purely because of my absolute love for Blood Rage. Yeah. This is going to build on that in terms of mechanics. It's the last in the trilogy for those games. I love the Egyptian artwork and the theme and the miniatures, of course, from Simon look ridiculously awesome. Mm-hmm. I think this is going to be a step up in terms of the interaction and the, not the complexity, but the depth that this area control game will have. I love area control. I love Blood Rage. And I just know that Eric Lang is going to do a phenomenal job building and capping off that trilogy with his best game yet. So yeah, Ankh, Gods of Egypt. I'm really looking forward to that one. And that may or may not be because I went all in with every single bit of expansion content as well.
Yeah. My one I've talked about before as well, which is Return to Dark Tower.
Mm.
The story element, you know, Isaac Childress has written some content for it, as well as many other excellent, story creators in our hobby, not just game developers, but people who have an innate ability to tell a good story or build a great universe. But just the table presence as well. I think this is going to be a game that people just won't be able to walk past.
Yeah.
Like you talk about Everdell with the tree.
Mm-hmm. This is going to be the tower.
Yeah.
But you interact with the tower. Mm-hmm. It plays a role in the game. I can't wait. So, yeah, Return to Dark Tower for me.
Okay. Very cool.
And Mike?
I think for me, I got a bunch. Is it a game that we had to back in 2020, do you reckon, or one that we're just going to get this year?
No, just what you're anticipating. It could have been something you ordered yesterday.
Oh, mate, in that case, it's definitely Zombicide, you know, second edition. How can it not be? How can it not be? Like, one of the only things I've gone absolutely all in for that was a ridiculous amount. But, man, when you're talking about a miniature of the queen holding a chain gun. We're talking about Penn and Teller in the game. There's so many amazing things that's going to be coming in this game with new gameplay and dark modes and all sorts of stuff. Man, has to absolutely be Zombicide Second Edition, which should have been here by now. But it's okay. We're waiting. 2020 was a crazy year, so I got to give them a bit of time. But look, seeing as how hard things have been, they reckon they're not too far behind. So
okay.
I'm very, very much anticipating. But, man, I'm the same as you, Jules. I'm waiting for Ankh. I did a late pledge for that one because I couldn't help myself. Nemesis is another one for me. Everything with minis, really. All the minis.
Yeah, all the minis. I'm just all the plastic.
Give me the bits, you know. But, definitely, yeah, Zombicide all the way.
All right. Well, that wraps up our 2020 review. I'll ask one question, just as a bit of a random one. There's six different categories there. Just give me one honorable mention. I'll go first.
Of any of those six questions?
Yeah, yeah. I'll go first because this one's only fairly new to my collection too. But it was toss up between this and Super Fantasy Brawl for my biggest surprise of 2020, and that was Calico.
Oh,
back on the cats, Mike. Yeah, it was. It's like a cat-friendly show, this one. But what surprised me with this is that I bought it because I'd heard good things, and friends of the show, Mick and Starla played it, and they talked highly of it. And I just saw a picture of Mick, like with his head in his hands, just trying to. I'm like, this is a game about cats and buttons. How hard could it be? Oh yeah, it can be hard. It's a really crunchy game, and it's so simple. Yet so thought provoking, kind of like if you like Azul, you'll love this. I would call it much better than Azul personally, but some people may not. I like Azul, but I always say I play Azul, but I never choose to play Azul. Yeah. But this game, your actions are simply place a tile, take a tile, turn over. There's nothing you could teach a 2-year-old how to play this game. They won't do very well.
Yeah.
But then again, you never know. They could surprise. but it's just so great because there's three different ways to score points and they kind of contradict each other. So you've got a small board to work with and you don't really know where to draw your focus to. It's really good. It's I wouldn't say it's under the radar because it's kind of like the new hotness, but I would have expected this be a game that many people would go, oh no, I'm not going to buy a silly game about cats and quilts.
Yeah.
But give it a crack. It's really good.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I think for me, I did have one on there that I was going to mention and I didn't get around to it. It's a small game, but it took me by surprise because I expected it to be an okay game. And once we got into it, it really made our eyes wide and go, this is pretty cool. And that was Big Easy Busking, the game about bands in New Orleans. New Orleans. It was really good. And I've been actually dying to get back to it because it just took us by surprise that this little music game was such a really interesting area control game where you're trying to learn new songs and play the right vibe to the right crowd and have enough energy to play those songs and get your energy back for your musicians. I really honestly went into it thinking, okay, it's a game about NOLA. I bought it because it was new. I bought it because it looked colorful. I didn't do much research at all. It wasn't too expensive. But when we played it, I remember we played the first round incorrectly, which is very typical of me and my group. And then we figured out a mistake and got into the second and third round. And it just took off. And it became so much more competitive and really interesting. And a lot of people have been confused when I said it's a really good little area control game because you wouldn't think that sort of theme would be area control, but they do it really well. So Big Easy Busking to me was just a really big surprise, and I think they did a really amazing job at it.
Yeah, cool.
All right, I'll give a couple on honorable mentions. For the question about anticipated game for this coming year, my other one would have been Veiled Fate.
Yeah.
Cool. And it was an expensive game for what it is. I have to say that. So it was one I said I need to play before I back it. And I did. I played it once, and that's what was enough for me to separate it from a lot of people were comparing it to War of Whispers, which is one of my all-time favorite games. But I needed to feel there was enough different, and there was for me. And I've only played it that once, and it was months ago now. And every once in a while, even today, I just remember some of those moments, and it was like, oh, that was so cool. Like, just that one game had so many good moments in it, and I know it's going to be a game that delivers those continuously. And just really quickly, one that I really wanted to mention for surprise for 2020, it was a game that I'd never heard of and eventually came across through seeing it somewhere online. That was The Estates. This game is so me. Like, I just if people don't know, my title is Evil, Evil Jules, and you can be straight up evil in this game. Mm-hmm. It's just all the information's there. You get to embezzle money each turn to try and get a few extra points at the end of the game. You can see the pieces that people really need to complete their towers or take control, and just put it up for auction when they don't have any money to buy it. And just, it's that game. You have to play it with the right people. People with, you know, that aren't going to take it personally and just, you know, have a good laugh and have a fun time. But there's so many moments that game provides to just have total, brutal cutthroat moments and so many laughs. And, yeah, I didn't know about it before this year and I absolutely love it.
Cool.
All right, there we go. That's a definitive review now of 2020. Mm. So we'll leave it there and we'll move on to swearing an oath. So, guys, it's been a while since I've spoken to you, and I'd be interested to know what your oaths were because my memory's not that flash, and how you went and what's next. So, Mike, your oath.
Yeah. So I managed to do it before we recorded tonight. I wasn't supposed to record till Saturday. And I got the call. I think it was last night. Night or two ago saying, hey, do you want to record tonight? I'm like, ooh, I need to do my oath. and that was Chronicles of Crime. And it was great. Cool. I played the sort of train tutorial version, which was still a little mystery, which was really cool. And then my housemate actually had one. So you can actually purchase extra missions to do. And she actually had a reasonably short one. So I sort of played it while we were sort of getting dinner prepared. And it was fantastic. I was really curious as to how you use your phone to ask questions and all these sort of things. And the game plays really, really well. So For those that don't know, there's a deck of cards that are just like 55 faces, really. They're just different people. And all the cards in the game have the QR codes that you can scan with your mobile. And the game uses an app on your phone to use as well. And basically, as you go through the game, you just scan the QR codes to say, okay, well, if I want to ask this guy a question, I'm going to scan him first. He'll say hello. Then, okay, well, I want to ask you about this person. Now I want to ask you about this person, and they'll give you responses. And I want to ask you about this piece of evidence that I found. And okay, I'll sort of work out what I think about that. And, well, you mentioned this new location. So now I'm going to use this app and go to the new location. And you can actually go to like a virtual reality thing. We're actually looking around a room with your phone and literally turning around, looking up, looking down, and sort of how you want to do it is yell out to a person sitting next to you what you can see that sort of stands out. Okay, well, I can see muddy footprints. I can see vomit. I can see a bit of blood, a phone, and there's all these cards that represent evidence, and you can sort of go through and try to figure out if they're a viable piece of evidence. Then you got people working for you. Oh, okay, I want to call my criminologist and ask this person. I want to call the scientist and ask what kind of toxin this was that might be affecting this person. And you're really going around scanning. And the interesting thing is, because you could think, well, you could just scan everything in the game and win, but there's a timer. And you add time to everything that you do. So if you have to go back and forwards to different places, that adds like half an hour travel time each time. And you've got a certain amount of time to complete the mission. And it's just really, really interesting trying to work out who did it and why and how. And obviously they throw a bunch of curveballs, and it was really, really fun. And I've got the Noir expansion as well. And there's another five or so missions in my box that I can do. There's extra ones I can download on the app. So, it'll definitely get to the table again. It doesn't take a huge amount of time, but it's a really fun little mystery game trying to figure out what's going on. So, definitely won me a lot of points, and I thought it was fantastic. Really, really good game.
All right. Well done. So, what's next?
What's next? So, someone was actually surprised when I told him yesterday that I've only ever played Azul once online. I've mentioned a few times, I've gone backwards in this hobby where I've sort of played a lot of gateway games later. But I've never played an Azul in person, and I've never got the experience of the clickety clack of the tiles and laying them all out. So I recently bought my first copy of Azul, which is Summer Pavilion. And I've been reading some of the rules, trying to make sure I understand them properly. It's not super complicated. There's a couple of things I wasn't sure about, but I'm going to get that to the table soon, definitely. So my next game, I, Michael Faruja, swear an oath to play Azul Summer Pavilion by the time I'm on the podcast next.
Rightio, good nice. Stuff. My oath, I finally got it down to one. Well, I think technically two, because Dice Throne hadn't arrived. But I had a stack of oaths, just not necessarily because I've been failing, just because I kept adding games and games. But I think I ticked them all off the list last episode. But I hadn't ticked off Dice Throne, I don't think, because it hadn't arrived. But that has arrived, and I've played it a load. Such a great game. It's really good to play the Season 2 characters, because I've only had the Season 1.
Yeah.
And they've certainly sort of ramped up the things that can happen in the game. There's a lot more you can trigger. It's been really fun. Played it with Raf a couple of times, and even Adrian and I had a go, and it was good fun. But my main oath, I guess, this time around was Paladins of the West Kingdom, which I played, and it's so good. It's good. These Shem Phillips games, like Architects, is a great worker placement. One of my favorite worker placement, if not possibly my best favorite. This game, again, it's a worker placement game, but it's so different. So firstly, unlike any other worker placement game where, you're the blue color and, Jules might be the yellow color and you put out places on the board, the workers that you use for worker placement in this game are all different colors, and they're all different people that you recruit to your own board to place to do certain actions on your board. So you don't have a color. You don't have like, I'm the blue player or whatever else. You're just your board, and then there's some community spaces that you can kind of take up. What I liked about it was it definitely, for the first half of the game, it felt like you were working on your own thing, which some people might dislike. They might want a bit more player interaction. But then as the game progresses, the end of each round, these cards get turned over, and after about halfway through the game, or just before halfway through the game, there's these extra spaces that get brought up on the board that only one person can go to. And they're pretty decent places. They give you some good value. So that encourages a bit of player interaction. Once you've got your engine going and once you've got your board working well, then you've got to go and vie for these positions out on the community board. And I just really loved it. It was I can't wait to play it again. I played it a couple of times and just can't get enough. I love these games. I love the West Kingdom series. So so that was my oath completed. And it only makes sense that my next oath will be Viscounts of the West Kingdom. So I'm just going to keep going. So,
keep it on going.
Yeah. So I, Stephen Chivers, swear to play Viscounts by the next episode.
Bring it.
Good stuff. Well, it's been quite a long time since I've been on the podcast because I went to Melbourne for a couple of weeks and I just wasn't able to do any episodes while I was away. And even before then, I think it had been a while. But if my memory serves me right, Castell was my oath, which I have played it a few times now. So I got that done and I cannot wait to play my copy. I just need to wait for the missing bits to get sent to me. Oh, so mad about that. Anyway, the other one I still have outstanding, because I don't own the game, is the Oceania expansion to Wingspan. I don't own it. But I've just been, while we've been talking, I've been going through the workshop for TTS, and I think I found a mod that has it in there. So I think I can get that, assuming the mod works, I'm hoping I can get that ticked off. So I'm looking for volunteers to help me fulfill that oath. Steve's already put his hand up. So that's still ongoing. Because, look, I borrowed a copy of Wingspan from my work colleague who is not a board gamer at all. She just really likes birds. And so someone found it and gave it to her as a gift. And I played it with my wife a few times and I thought it was an okay game. I don't know. It just didn't grab me. And I've constantly heard from people that the Oceania expansion really gives it another level, which that might be what it needs for me to push it over the line to something I really enjoy. So that's why I put it up as an oath, because I genuinely am curious. So we'll see how that goes.
Is there just not enough soul crushing in there for you, Jules?
there's no card to shoot the birds, you know? Like what's
I did, like, I don't know if you heard, Jules, but my brother has come up with a house rule for the magpies.
Oh yes, so yes, I did hear
Flamme
about
Rouge.
That.
Yeah. So in the springtime when you pull out a magpie, when you activate a magpie, you collect a cyclist.
Yeah, I think that's great.
Yeah.
Oh dear.
Very good.
But I have big plans for this weekend.
Ooh.
So, if all things go right, I, Jules Watson, swear by the next time I'm on the podcast, we'll have played Twilight Imperium 4th edition.
Ooh.
Ooh, very good.
So, I have been invited to a game, and I'm very excited to try this. But
I am 100% certain you will love it. Even when I was playing it, I'm like, this is such a Jules game.
Yeah, I'm so excited for this. Yes, so it's with a few of the community members here in Canberra, which is fantastic. Really looking forward to that. But I feel like I should throw up something just in case things don't happen for one reason or another. Mm-hmm. So my backup plan is to throw in A War of Whispers. I just got my copy today. Obviously, it's a game I've played to death and I love it, but I really want to get my copy out that has all the deluxe bits. It's fantastic. And it's been really awesome to see, you know, the past week or so, lots of our community members getting their copies and already cracking it out and playing it and loving it. So
you weren't thinking it was so lovely when we were all getting it before you, Jules.
I was,
that's right.
I was this close to tears. I'm serious. Yeah. Like, I must be the last backer to get their copy.
And you're the one that told us all to buy it.
I know. I couldn't believe it. But it finally arrived.
It was a bit weird, though. I don't know if it's the same for you, Mike, but I didn't even know it was coming.
No.
No.
I was actually at a game day, and the person who I was at got their copy. I'm like, oh, wow, I wonder whether that means I've got my copy. So I quickly rang my wife and she's like, yeah, there's a package here for you.
Ah.
It says something like A War of Whispers or something. I'm like, where the hell did this come from?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was weird.
I, Sorry?
I was going to say, I knew it was coming because I'd been following the updates and I knew it had already arrived in Australia, but I was waiting for that shipping notification.
Mm.
But they never sent one. They sent it.
Yeah. I had some email correspondence because I had to check something a while ago and they said, oh, we'll send you a notification when it's going to be on its way to you. And when I saw that Steve got it, I emailed them that day before I got it. I emailed them that morning, like, hey, guys, I've seen people getting it. I haven't received notification yet. Is everything okay? Can I get a notification? And then not an hour later, I got it delivered to work. And in comes my colleague, like, you got a package.
We'll do you one better.
Ooh, it's there. So I was very happy.
Very good.
Yeah, that was weird. I've never had a Kickstarter that didn't have a shipping notification before. Yeah.
Just in case
I used to get it a few times, and I actually prefer it because it's kind of like, it's like, ooh, what's this? I have no idea what this is going
to
be.
As long as it gets to you, you prefer it, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
But it wasn't cool seeing everyone else on planet Earth getting theirs first. Fair call. It's just like, anyway, so that's my backup for the Oath, but fingers crossed, Twilight Imperium 4th edition this weekend.
Nice one. All right, well, that's the end of our O's, and that's the end of our show for tonight. Before we go, though, just a usual roundup. So you can catch us in many different places. The Board Game Barbecue Community Facebook group is a place where there's lots of conversation going on about board games. It's where we interact with everyone who listens to the show and is on Facebook. But also we have the Discord channel, which is where we interact with a lot of other people, both listeners and not, that just want to play loads of board games. So you can go on there, play games on TTS, Board Game Arena, Tabletopia, with us or with other members of the community. There's people from all over the world there always willing to play games. You can also find us on Twitter, Instagram, or on our website, which is just boardgamebarbecue.com, where on that website you'll find links to our Patreon page, which you can just sign up and become a Patreon member. There's a bit of extra, a few bonuses for doing that, but the main thing is that you're helping sponsor the show and helping it keep going on and into the future, as well as our merchandise store. So you can wear some Rompin' Big Board Game Barbecue shirts and be the style king and queen of the neighborhood. So nothing says style more than a pair of flaming dice. So
absolutely.
Get into that. But otherwise, you can also catch us, well, I guess in those places, it's or on the podcast every two episodes every week. Have done so for the last 8 months and will do so for the foreseeable future. So with that, just want to say a big thanks to all of our current patrons. It's your support is very much appreciated. And, of course, to our sponsor, Advent Games in Sydney. They do a great job there. That's an excellent website to buy games from, very well categorized and organized. So big fat shout out to Advent. They've done a fantastic job giving away loads of games for us over the last few months. But with that, there's only two more people to thank, and that is yourself, Jules.
No, thank you, Steve. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
And, yeah, of course, Mike.
Thank you, gentlemen. It was a pleasure as always.
It was. Glad to be back in the chair. It was good fun. I've been hanging out for this episode. Hey,
absolutely. Yeah, I've been itching for it.
Yeah, nothing better to do than sit around and talk about board games.
That's it.
All right, well, with that, we'll see you on the next episode. Cheers.
Toodaloo.
Toodaloo.
What's another good old toodaloo?
Nothing.
Bring it nothing back, I say.
Hey, there's been something that's been bothering me in the back of your camera shot, Mike, and that is a copy of Castell over to your right shoulder.
What? This is my housemate.
Wait, where? Oh, it is in the very, very left of frame, near Seventh Continent. Oh my goodness, dude. What?
Yeah.
Seventh Continent.
Where am I?
Down in the middle.
Oh, shit, it is too.
You gotta put this in the segment, Steve. Dude.
Oh, you're kidding.
It's a gem.
I should get him now and be like, dude, how do you know about this game? Tell us, have you played it yet? We should do a quick secret segment and interview someone who might have played it.
Oh, so good.
There you go.
Yeah, just open it up right now.
I wonder if he's got all the
count
bits.
Count the bits.
Does he have all the bits? Have you got the missing bits that I need? Check out the bag.
I'll give you a good price from Jules.
Ooh, check out the bag, though.
Oh, look
it's enormous.
That's ridiculous.
That's huge.
Oh, he's got all the bits in there. Okay, so it's been played.
There's people.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll ask him. As soon as I finish here, I'll go grab him and say,
that bag
tell me
is
about Castell.
Huge.
That's a huge bag. Awesome. But it doesn't say scumbag on it. That's
no,
one thing.
No, it doesn't.
That's one issue. That's hilarious.
That's first game, the best game you played in 2020? New game, sorry. I better tell you who goes first.
Yeah.
Good hosting, Steve.